Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are John Lindemann.
I'm apologizing to my cat because we just clapped and kind of scared him. Sorry, big guy.
Right. Guillaume Veillette.
I posted a Vine of my cat snoring, and it didn't get the traction that I thought it would.
You should have clapped at it, like James Jones.
It's tough out there.
I have seen the endless pile of government paperwork, and I no longer feel fear death. I no longer feel death.
You don't
death
feel
either.
That, yeah. Well, that's a good thing.
You don't feel it either.
Yeah. No, it just means it happens, and it's...
Oh.
Sure. Death happens. Great start to the show there, James.
You're welcome. if this was a Thursday, I would be boundless optimism and happy joy.
Yes. We are on a bit of a compressed schedule this week. Things are going on, and everyone is being very flexible, and I truly appreciate it. So
I am flexing this whiskey.
We're probably going to have a little bit of a shorter episode this week, but we have a bunch of stuff we want to talk about, including some listener mail coming up. So anyway, let's roll into new business. I haven't gone first in a while, and I figured I would just get my stuff out of the way. I've been playing a very short game, shouldn't take that much time to talk about. It's called Gunman Clive 2. Just came out on the 3DS eShop last week. It's a very straightforward sequel to the first Gunman Clive, which we talked about a couple years ago and generally liked other than James. James, I seem to recall you thought it was kind of just too slow and not that interesting.
Very, very slow.
Yeah, and I don't think you would like the sequel any better because it really feels about the same. And the basic mechanics are still, you know, you play this cowboy dude who, you know, walks, I would say runs and jumps, but he doesn't really run. He just kind of walks and jumps. And, it's set up similar to Mega Man, although the little situations you get into are often much simpler. You rarely have to fight more than one enemy at a time. But this one does have more Mega Man style platforming. And I think I do like the sequel to Gunman Clive a lot better than the first one. It's similar length, maybe a little bit longer, but it has a lot more variety. You're still walking around and shooting your little six shooter at things, but, and it's still pretty hard, but they added color. The art style is basically the same, except there's just more, you know, before it was kind of sepia tone looking, these very, very nice, kind of hand-drawn looking, although it was actually made of polygons, but everything has this kind of a brush stroke effect and it shimmers a little bit. So it looks like it's anime. It looks like hand-drawn. Excuse me.
Just it say the like aha video take on me.
Not quite.
No,
not quite, but maybe the new one might actually look a little bit more like that because it does have more color to it. And, it's still not like an extremely colorful game, but it, you know, now a typical screenshot of Gunman Clive 2 has maybe four or five colors on it instead of two. So it does make it look different, although it's still very simple. And, the gameplay, you know, the things that Gunman Clive can do are exactly the same as before. He doesn't have any new powers or any new power-ups or anything like that, but the level designs are different. The first third of the game maybe feels basically just like more levels from the first game, but then things start to get stranger and stranger. I think about halfway through the game, my eyes opened up a little bit wider when I found myself riding in a mine cart on the back of a dinosaur. And then not too long after that, I was, shooting at ninjas who were hanging onto the walls and throwing a shuriken at me. And, and then later on riding on the back of a pterodactyl in a Star Fox style, shooter level that's like a minute long, you know, like really, really short, really simple, but looks cool and is fun to play. And, and then later on, the last section of the game actually does some gravity switching stuff where there's, conveyor belts and, you know, sections of the wall and of the ceiling that where they change gravity and you have to navigate all that stuff. I mean, it's not really anything you haven't seen in other games, but I think it's done well, and everything in Gunman Clive is so short that you never really have a chance to get tired of anything because the levels are just very, very short. Almost all of them can be finished in less than 90 seconds, probably a lot less than that if you're a speedrunner, but, you know, even a doofus like me can beat these levels quickly. And it's modern in the sense that although it can be pretty difficult, there are no lives. If you die, you just start over at the beginning of the level. There's no checkpoints either. It's like the levels are short, so you beat the level in one life or you don't. And if you're having trouble, at least it's very, very painless to just keep trying, and eventually you'll get through it. I mean, these things are so simple that there's really not that many different ways to tackle it until you figure something out that works. So there's also boss battles. I think there were boss battles in the first game, but they're more memorable here in the second game. They're more complicated. They're more interesting. And they're some of the boss battles are actually probably some of the longest stages in the game, because these guys just take a lot of hits and they change up their patterns quite a bit. So, you know, Gunman Clive 2 is not like the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I think, you know, it was kind of one of the first indie games on 3DS, back when the first one came out. And it's just not as special now. It has a lot more competition. There's been a lot of good stuff. You know, you stack this up to something like Shovel Knight, and it doesn't even really compare. But it's also $3. I mean, it's a small game. It knows what it's doing. And, I think if you like the first one, you'll definitely appreciate the second one. But like I said, I don't know that it's going to convert anyone, just because it is very faithful. And it feels almost like a stopgap to me until this guy, this one guy made virtually everything in the game except the music. Mm-hmm. And, he's talked about branching out into other kinds of games, and I'm a little bit surprised that he made a sequel to Gunman Clive that is so close to the first one. But I wonder if he's just making some money or biding his time until he does something different.
Yeah, I think that he started work on a game that was inspired by The Legend of Zelda. He showed some screenshots with like skeletons in them, and it looked very much like a Zelda game. But then I think he canceled it, perhaps because Link Between Worlds was announced. I think he maybe thought it was redundant, you know.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
I doubt it would have been, but that's his decision. I mean, Gunman Clive 2 is a little bit redundant with the first one, so that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but it's still good. It's a fun game, and if you're looking for, you know, this kind of bite-sized action thing on your 3DS, it's nice. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And it still looks really cool, you know, and the color really does help with that. The 3D effect is also very nice in a lot of the levels as well. And very quickly, I want to mention that I got to play for the first time in, I don't even remember how long, I got to play some 5-player Nintendo Land last weekend. I was over at some people's houses, well, one person's house. I was surprised to find that they, had a Wii U and were, you know, playing a few different things. We played some 4-player Mario Kart, 8, and, I decided that I don't like that game in 4-player split screen.
No, it's impossible.
It runs at really low frame rate, and I wasn't even able to do my tricks off the ramps because the timing on the ramps is different when the frame rate is that bad. And it just was very unpleasant to look at, even on a very large TV, you know, having a fourth of it like that. And I was playing with a gamepad, and I immediately had that thought that everybody talked about. Why can't I just look at the gamepad and have that be the whole screen for my display? And instead, if you look down at the gamepad, if you flip it over to that view, you still get the split screen, except now it's on this tiny thing in front of you. It's ridiculous.
Right.
It's so bad. I like Mario Kart 8 a lot. I've mostly played it at single player and online, and I think those are the two good modes. And I think 4-player split screen is reasonably entertaining if everyone's around the same skill level, but that was certainly not the case. In my session, I wasn't even the best player. The best player was someone who's like watched a bunch of world record ghost data and, you know, has tried to learn all the weird snaking substitute moves. I the first time I'd heard terms like fire
people.
Hopping and demon hopping and demon sliding. And
yeah. You're playing a garbage person. Yeah.
He's just hyper-competitive and interested in sort of, you know, getting the absolute maximum performance out of every single character combination. And that's just way beyond my level of interest in a game like Mario Kart. So I was just playing it the way I normally do and was doing not great, you know, and everybody else was really bad at it. So
it was a weird situation. Well, I think that now you've learned who not to invite anymore.
Exactly.
I wouldn't say that. I think it's probably game to game. But we also played some Nintendo Land. And like I said, we did 5-player. We did the train mode. And I remember, I want to say I might have tried this with my friend Kevin back when the Wii U first launched, and or maybe one other person as well. But I remember trying it like 2 or 3 players. It didn't make that much sense. It works a lot better in 5-player. And I'd forgotten that this mode existed or really how it works, but it's similar to, I guess you could say it's kind of like Mario Party. but without the board, and you're not necessarily all five playing these mini games every time. You take turns selecting the event, and when it's your turn to select, you can it'll give you an array of like, you know, three or four different options. Some of them involve all five players, but most of the time you'll be challenging one other player in a particular event. And the events, it'll be like, you know, you could play Octopus Dance against this person, or Octopus Dance against this other person, or you can play the Donkey Kong, you know, crazy arcade difficult thing against this other person. So it kind of randomly sets up these different one-on-one or one-on-two scenarios. And then maybe there's one option where everybody plays at the same time. And the sort of one-on-one nature of it becomes really interesting because the other people who aren't active in that particular mini game get to bet on who they think will win. And so the goal in the end is to have the most coins, which you might be able to pull off even if you don't win any of the mini games, if you just kind of predict who will do better. And the other thing about it is that, you know, obviously Nintendo Land, the quality of the different events in that game is very uneven. And I think Octopus Dance is kind of garbage, but the fact that you can use it to challenge someone else who you might know is even worse than you at it makes it kind of a strategic element, even when, you know, there's an event evolved that no one really particularly likes. It becomes almost like a troll element that you can use strategically. So I thought that was kind of an interesting setup and a way of playing Nintendo Land that I had not really tried before. And it's a good way to kind of survey all those different events, but also just the tons of controller switching becomes kind of confusing after a while. It's all handled not very gracefully, I think. Yeah, Nintendo Land is still, it's still a really neat game, and I was curious to spend some time with it, you know, knowing that Splatoon is coming up pretty soon and that was made by a lot of the same people. I hadn't really spent much time thinking about Nintendo Land in a couple of years, and it was kind of fun to go back to it. I'd also, you know, everybody was like, well, yeah, I mean, you're probably much better at these mini games than I am, you know, than we are. And I was like, I haven't played this game in at least 2 years, and I never even played that much of it in the first place. So I was probably the worst at everything in Nintendo Land compared to the people I was playing with. But it made for a good competitive scene. So that was actually pretty fun. I would do that again. Especially,
we all dance the octopus to the oblivion.
Especially mixing in some alcohol with it, you know, it turns out to be a pretty good party game. Not a huge surprise, but it just, for me, that fact was kind of an abstraction for the most part. I just had never really been able to drum up enough interest in the Wii U back when it first. I mean, most of my friends didn't even know what it was when the Wii U launched. It was the complete opposite of Wii. You know, when Wii launched, everybody wanted to come bowl with me until I got completely sick of doing that. And with Wii U, I had to like basically give a marketing pitch just to get people to actually hold the controller and try something on it. So getting five people together was, it might have happened once ever. And I don't even remember if that was the case. So, it was nice to go back and remember, oh yeah, this is kind of like what Nintendo wants you to do with this system. I don't know how much it ever happens, but it was neat for me to go back and have that experience. So let's move on to James. And James.
Yeah. Yes.
You've been demoing?
Uh-huh, yeah. So, last week, Nintendo put out a demo for, I guess now we'd say, the rapidly approaching codenamed Steam, which was the game they announced.
Sooner than any of us thought.
Game they announced back at E3 during their developer roundtable, and it was a third-person, tactical, squad-based... I mean, basically, it's...
It's like Splatoon, basically the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. In one way, it is like Splatoon, though. It's a handful of developers that Nintendo's never really put out there in the forefront before, kind of making their own thing. Based out of Intelligent Systems, it's essentially team number, I guess, 3 of that particular studio. So we've got this, I have struggled to describe it. If you've played Valkyria Chronicles, it's that. If you haven't, well, it's going to be more complicated. Essentially, it's turn-based in that each character has a certain amount of movement points that you use to control them. But it's kind of over-the-shoulder third person with projectile weapons and cover and Overwatch skills. I mean, there's a few other games out there like that. I'm blanking on what the big one that just came out not that long ago was, but, Yeah, I mean, odds are, if listening to the show, you know what this is. I don't know why I'm bothering to explain it. But I've been playing the Codename Steam demo. And my immediate takeaway is a couple things. One, I didn't really, a lot of people seem to be really, really into it. I wasn't super into it as I was playing it. And part of that might be because things like customization, they're all locked out because right now you can't get that stuff in the demo. You know, it's demo. It's a fairly lengthy demo, but it's basically just level, end of game. So the characters you have are fairly diverse. You have a character who essentially shoots grenades, the bear launcher as they refer to it, with does significant splash damage. You have a character who essentially pole vaults onto other people's heads. He launches himself. You have a healer, and then you have your just sort of generic all-around roughneck. And it felt like...
And it's really set up as a series of tutorials. And that, right. I'm guessing that might be why it didn't grab you as much, because you already know how to play this kind of game, and most people don't. So the demo was definitely set up for introducing the average Joe gamer to what's going on.
It felt a little slow. So you move around and attack with the same element. It's a steam power. And the one takeaway I had, even with the full steam gauge, although it appears you can make it a little bit longer, is that it took a really long time to get anywhere for a lot of the characters. So you may spend 3 or 4 turns really just advancing through open ground, which is really not ideal for this kind of scenario.
Or have you played Fire Emblem?
But Fire Emblem, it's not so bad with the open ground usually. There's characters who can clear the open ground quickly, and you use them to cover the advance of the slower characters.
Yeah, and that may very well be the case with this too, once you have the full, because there's a lot of playable characters.
But you're limited to the number of characters you can bring into the field. I think it's 4.
Okay, but what I'm saying is at some point you may get, you know, reconnaissance units, scouts, that sort of thing that are more mobile and can balance out the flow of movement.
I don't know that you're going to be able to use them to clear, because characters can really only attack but a handful of times per turn, even if they don't move at all. So there's some strategy stuff I need to see work out better that in the demo you just don't really get.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like it plays a little bit slow. But again, I also played Valkyria Chronicles, which is a game where 95% of the levels can be beaten by a fully upgraded scout just running straight to the goal in the very first turn. So
yeah. I hope Codename Steam isn't that broken. My first thought was, hey, this is basically XCOM, the new XCOM, which I loved.
That was the game I was trying to think of.
A lot of people loved. I mean, that game was a huge hit. It won a bunch of Game of the Year stuff. And I think, you know, I asked them about this at the developer roundtable last year at E3, and they said, well, we started this game before that XCOM came out, but we are big fans of it. And, you know, it definitely, I don't remember exactly what they said, but yeah, I mean, they're aware of the comparison is going to be made, and it should be made. It works to their advantage. And to me, it felt a lot. I mean, it's XCOM, except you have more camera control, and you know, I think it's going to play nice on the new 3DS XL because you have the C-stick to look around, and
controls are a little rough.
Line of sight is very important. You can basically shoot whatever you can see, but yeah, I thought even on my regular XL right now, using the face buttons for the camera worked well, just because, you know, there's no time pressure to do it quickly or be really precise with it. So it was just
because enemies in Overwatch are essentially working in turns, even inside your turn. So it's not like some other games in that kind of gameplay where you could just quickly get the shot off and then immediately end the turn before the Overwatch kicks in. So there is I don't want to say it's more casual, but you can be more casual about your movement is what I mean.
I think the interface is nice too. Like things like Overwatch, you know, and XCOM had that, but you had to select it. It was almost like a special ability that, you know, you had to save
up. I never understood that. It doesn't really saving up points, and you have to save them up in this game too, makes sense. But having to explicitly say go into Overwatch, I don't understand.
Right. It doesn't make that much sense. And that's where Codename Steam is very smart. I mean, it's like, hey, if you have enough energy left to shoot an enemy, if it just walks right in front of you, your character should just do that. You know, you don't really have to tell him to do that. And that speeds up the flow of, you know, using this interface. And I thought that was clever. I think the fact that you don't have to undo your path tracing, you know, like you're telling a character to, you know, go around here and then around that corner. And then, you know, you don't, if you make a mistake, you don't have to click back a bunch of times to try to redo it. You just walk back the way you came. Because the game is smart enough to understand that if you retrace your steps, you should regain the energy that you spent on that movement. So you can very, as long as you don't pick up an item or shoot something, you can very easily test out the limits of how far you can go and kind of look around corners and decide how you want to do things. And it doesn't feel like you have to commit to something, but also doesn't feel like you have to go through a really tedious process of trying every, you know, that even in Fire Emblem, there's a little bit of that where, you know, you get this movement arrow that shows the path that your character will take. But, you know,
that's what the color grid's for in that game. That's how they handle it. They have the blue limits where you can move and the red limits where you can attack.
Right. And that's an optional feature. But I think Codename Steam handles that stuff very gracefully and in a way that's actually better than some of its peers, like XCOM.
So the only thing I would have wanted in that, I agree, it would have been just a little marker on the submap saying, hey, this is where you started from. If you're trying to walk your way back. Because sometimes I had to kind of fidget around a little bit. It's like, okay, was it this square I started in? No. Was it this one? No. Was it this one? No. And then eventually I hit it. I'm like, okay, now we're back to zero.
Okay, yeah. And that may be something that could be an option that's just not in the demo.
Yeah.
You know, little things like that I'm not too worried about.
Yeah, I mean, it's the game itself feels like it's put together well. I mean, it's got the skeleton of an effective game of this style.
Nice frame rate, too. Especially for a third-person game on 3DS where you have full camera movement. I was surprised that it runs as smoothly as it does. And it looks really great.
That's the other thing. I was never really 100% on board the art style. I was never like a Jack Kirby art style fan. I think a lot of the old comics look really, really weird and disproportioned and just the coloring is all kind of goofy looking. And there's a little bit of the game here that I don't think looks great compared to other 3DS games, just in terms of it's not visual style, but in terms of its actual, like, how many polygons make up a character, which isn't the kind of thing that I usually get, you know, about. But, like, some of the characters have nearly flattish faces, and it's like, that looks
They're chunky on purpose, definitely. Yeah. And absolutely. Yeah.
And then part of it, you know, the art style is not super doing it for me. I mean, it's not that it looks bad. It's just, I think it's just a your taste will vary kind of thing.
Sure.
My takeaway from the demo is, I'm interested in the game, but it felt a little bit slower than what I'm used to. Understanding this is a tutorial. And it really just made me go back and play Valkyria Chronicles again. That last piece of DLC I never played. And then I realized if you can't cheese that game, and in the DLC they realized people could cheese the game and they took out all the cheesiness. Like, you could get yourself wrecked. So I'm hoping that there is some degree of wreckage potential here where you can really fuck it up.
I would prefer that it's just balanced so that you don't feel like you have to exploit the game in order to make it fun or achievable. I actually have a lot of trust in intelligence systems to do that part correctly. And they claimed at E3 that this would be, that this game would get really difficult later on. I mean, they seem to be preparing people. And I mean, these guys have been making strategy games for like 25 years at least. I mean, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm just nervous that with a limit of four characters, which I mean, that's how many slots this game has when you pick characters. Mm-hmm. So it's, even when they add more, it's not going to increase that number. I'm just worried that you're always going to be somewhat limited in terms of, you know, how much of a field you can manage at one time. And maybe it's just going to always be, all right, I've got this core that's going to try to move up. And, you know, I don't like to play these games turtling. And when you're limited to a number of characters, that's sort of the default go-to. So I really need to see what a late game scenario looks like. You know, just do the worlds get bigger? They seem to be very 3D compared to a lot of the games in this kind of style where, you know, there's a lot of going upstairs, going downstairs, falling behind boxes and then getting stuck there because you weren't really supposed to go there and your character's now kind of jammed in the freaking level architecture.
Well, you can destroy the levels too. There's a lot of destructible.
Yeah, there's a lot of destructible environments. Yeah. In the demo, there's a stage where there's a chandelier that you can shoot down and do damage, but the game told me that after I'd already bombed all the characters under it. I was like, why didn't you tell me that to begin with, game? What the fuck?
I feel confident that you'll end up really enjoying this, James. And I think I will too. I'm really excited
for it. I hope
so. The demo, I was excited last year, but you know, we didn't get to play it at E3. They just showed it to us.
No, nobody played it.
And it feels better than I was expecting. It feels smoother. And, the only complaint I would have about the demo so far, I haven't finished the demo because it is long, but, it feels like watching the enemies take their turn is kind of,
oh god, it's excruciating.
Yeah, because your limit, you know, but their idea, instead of there being like a fog of war or something like that, it's just you can only see what your character can see. So you can move the camera around a little bit while all that's happening, but you can't you know, you can't translate, you can't move around corners. And so it just feels like you're basically standing there waiting for things to happen. And part of me wonders if that they might be limited by, you know, the CPU speed of running all these AI routines.
Maybe.
And I wonder if on the new system, if that stuff might, maybe you can adjust that to go faster or just skip, you know, basically just have it happen automatically and skip it like you can in Fire Emblem.
The other thing that I noticed during that phase is the fact that enemies, at least in some of the stages, constantly respawned, which meant even if you very tactically cleared everything behind you, you constantly had to turn around every two turns and deal with these enemies that just spawned behind you, which can be kind of obnoxious when you're having to watch them walk the whole level for three turns just so you can turn around and kill them and have another one respawn that can walk the whole level. For three turns. It's like, I've already killed this dude like six times. Just go away. I don't want to see you anymore. I don't know. There's some stuff here that I'm.
Can you destroy the generator, the enemy spawn?
No.
Point?
So they just fall from the sky into the stage.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
I wonder if that might be a demoism. Because that. Maybe. Not a great element to have in a level like, in a game like this.
Right. Because if your goal is to advance to somewhere, what you don't want to do is leave people behind you.
Yeah, well, and leave enemies.
Especially if the game can just keep making them behind
you.
Yeah,
that's weird. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. That definitely would be not good in some of the scenarios they set up. It's actually kind of a problem because they spawn right next to the exit. And you're like, God damn it, really?
Sure.
Again?
All right.
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll stay tuned. Yeah, that game is coming out like in a month. I mean,
something
really
like
soon.
That. Yeah, I mean, it's so, like it's almost weird how little they talked about it between E3 and like 2 months ago.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure. You know, once they get this new system out the door and they get past Majora, it's going to be full steam ahead on Codename Steam. Okay. Well, Guillaume, let's hear about what you've been playing.
Sure. Well, I've been trying to get into a couple of new games and nothing really stuck. What I've been playing most, actually over like 2 weeks ago is Wario Land 3, which I've had on my, 3DS for a long time and finally gave a real shot. And, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Like people maybe remember that I was not over the moon with, Wario Land 2. I thought that the level design was kind of arbitrary. Like every wall seemed to be breakable with like some coins behind them. And, you just had to basically, ram into every wall to find every secret. And I did not really find that clever or fulfilling or anything like that. But the game had a lot of cool ideas. I mean, like the whole, I don't know, the whole conceit behind it that, Wario is exploring his own castle. And depending on how you finish a level, you've got these branching paths. And then when you finish the game the first time, you can see all the stuff that you missed. And it turns out that even like at the very beginning, when Wario is sleeping and woken up, that's how the game starts. If you just decide to not move and keep sleeping, then you get a different like first level. So that kind of stuff, like, was really ballsy, you know, like, was really, really clever and really, I wish that I liked the game better. But Wario Land 3, does also have, you know, kind of a similar, like, I'm not sure how to say this. It's ambitious, you know?
Yeah.
You cannot fault the Wario Land sequels for not being ambitious, because they really, really are. They're trying stuff that I don't think had really been done before. And so in Wario Land 3, they kind of go back, like, Wario, just as in the second game, is invincible. Enemies don't hurt him, but they do give him, like, weird status effects that you can use to solve puzzles or collect doodads or whatever. You know, like, he gets stung by a bee and he inflates and starts floating. And you use that to your advantage, you know. Things like that. Like, enemies can flatten you and then you're, like, flat as a pancake. And you can use that to slide into, you know, openings that you can't go normally. So that's still in this game. But what they did is they took away most of what Wario can do, like most of his quote-unquote powers, such as breaking bricks, actually, or even like being able to jump from an enemy's back, like to reach higher ledges. They took that away, and at the beginning, the game is very slow because there's almost nothing you can do, you know? Like, there's basically this one level that you can finish, like, this one way, but they tease you with, like, these various... you can see, if you pause the game and see on the menu, like, there's four chests in the first level that you can open, but really, in your unpowered state, you can only get the first one. And so the game becomes, you know, gradually, as you open chests, you find trinkets and you find power-ups that will allow you to get more chests and get further in the game. Where the game is really smart is how, like, so many paths in any given level is completely closed off to you until you've fulfilled the requirements. I think that's pretty cool. And not only, you know, I mean, like, this kind of gives the game kind of a Metroid quality. You know, like,
yeah,
there's
this
area.
Yeah, this game is James's nightmare.
Right. So, you know, like, there's these areas you can clearly see that there's this chest there, but you can't get to it yet because you just don't have the right ability. But once you do, like, it's really satisfying to finally go back to that level and get that one thing that you had been missing this whole time. So there's this Metroid element to it. But not only that, there's also a day and night cycle. When you complete a level or when you exit a level, you know, day turns to night. And, like, the town level where there, you know, it's just like, you know, the graphics, like, it looks like a town, looks like regular. At night, you've got these street lamps and you've got these zombies popping out of the ground, and these zombies can curse you, like, turn you into a zombie. And, so you can, as a zombie, you can reach other areas that you couldn't during the day.
Yeah. Some levels aren't really that much different between day and night, and
sure.
Some of them are completely different. And I think some of them you can even only go into during the right time of day. I can't recall, but yeah, it makes a big difference sometimes.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's really ambitious that way. You know, not only are the levels, like, there's multiple paths and you've got to find all this stuff to unlock powers and to... not just unlock powers, but also kind of trigger something in level. Like in one chest, you'll find kind of a thing that creates wind, and the wind is going to blow into on the world map into the leaves of a tree, and then in that tree level, suddenly there's, you know, falling leaves that you can jump, you know, from one to the other, and that, you know, that changes again where you can go and how you can traverse the level. So not only there's all that, but there's on top of that, like the fact that these levels have basically two different versions during the day, during the night. Mm-hmm. And so, well, yeah, as I said, you can't fault it for not being ambitious. Where it becomes really annoying is that perhaps they went a little bit too far with locking abilities away. Like it's really jarring when, like, you go from the previous Wario games and then you get to this one and you can't even jump on the back of an enemy. You know, you can and you're going to kill it, but you're not going to jump higher. And it's an ability that's been in Mario forever, right? And in this game, they lock it like it's the next to last power up that you unlock. And, so it's a really, really slow ramp up. And I think a lot of people might not enjoy that. And there's also difficulty in knowing where to go next, because when you unlock a new power up, then on the world map, like, you're going to see the various levels flash, like, where something opens up thanks to that power up. So sure, okay, so you, like, let's say, like, you get a new power up, three new levels open up, that's cool. You go to one, you finish it, and, like, you get the thing you were supposed to get in it, you finish it. You try to go into the next one that you saw flashing, and you can't get anywhere. And you realize, oh shit, like, it was flashing earlier, but now because I finished the level, now night turned to day, and the tide in this level is low instead of high. And so I can't do the thing, like, I was supposed to be able to do something and I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, you just go in the level and exit out and then go back into it.
Sure. It is a big deal, though, when you don't know that the specific thing that you were supposed to be doing required a high tide. You know, like the level.
Sure. Yes. You're right. And I would say the bigger problem is that it'll show you the three levels where something just opened up. mm-hmm. and you go to one of those, and whatever you get in that level opens up even three more.
Right.
And so there's no way to like replay those or check those clues. So you almost have to have like a piece of paper next to you so that every time you get to the end of a level and you open up new stuff, you can like write down S4, E2, you know, the names of all these levels that blinked off so that you don't forget which ones that you should go back to and be looking for something new.
Right.
That I found a little bit overwhelming. And I think that's just kind of an artifact of the game being a little bit ahead of its time probably and just not being quite so user friendly as something would be nowadays.
Yeah. So I'm really I approve of this game's ambition and you know, like it does try to do something that hadn't been done before, but the execution is, you know, so a little bit. And usually I like to complete platformers 100%, but this one I beat the end boss and I'm kind of done with it. I haven't gone back to it and I don't really plan to. But it's a long game.
I mean, just getting to the end of it will take you quite a while.
It's a long game.
It's a big, for a Game Boy Color game, you know, you might not think of that system as having a bunch of like really big ones, but this is almost an RPG of a 2D platformer. I mean, it's very complicated, and it's very, very dense, and there's just a bunch of stuff to do.
If I had played it back in the day, back when it came out in the year 2000, I think I would have had a better opinion of it, because back then it had been 6 years since Super Metroid. And this game has kind of that flavor, and we hadn't had that kind of gaming since, you know, Castlevania, which I hadn't played back then either. But I mean, you know, it had been 6 years since I had played a game like that, and I would have loved it.
Yeah, at that point it had been 3 years since Symphony of the Night even, so I was starving for that stuff, and I was delighted that Wario Land had gone in that unexpected direction. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Wario Land 3 is one of the Club Nintendo games, I believe, that you can get here.
I don't think so.
In the last batch.
No, I think only the second one is there.
Only two.
If you can get into Club Nintendo.
Yeah, I can't even open it right now, but... Okay,
right.
Well, I thought 3 had shown up at one point. Maybe not, but if you find it, get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like $4 or $5 on eShop, so it's a great game.
And very quickly, I've also played Mighty Final Fight. It's an NES game. You know, it came out after the Final Fight games came out on Super Nintendo. And I don't know. I heard a lot of people praise it for being like the best Final Fight that you can get on a Nintendo console. And I don't know. I don't think, does that mean anything? Like, is that even?
Yeah, it does.
I'm not so sure. Like, I don't think it's the best one just because player only. And these games just aren't fun without a second player to play with.
Correct.
They just aren't. About Final Fight on Super Nintendo.
Absolutely. Yeah. That game is not good. But the sequels at least had co-op. You know, there was at least that.
See, when I look at Final Fight Mighty, mm-hmm. the one thing I take away from it is, damn, that game came out on the NES.
Yeah, it looks good.
It's like you see that game and you're like, damn, really?
Yeah, sure, it looks good, but there's never more than two enemies at the same time on screen, for obvious reasons.
There are more than one of you on screen, so it's fine.
Right. And, you get access to the three characters that were in the arcade version of Final Fight. So you get Gi or Guy or, I don't know.
Let's go with Gi.
Sure. Okay. So Gi. And,
let's go with Bimmy.
So you can play as me. I'm a kick-ass ninja. And, so you don't have to play as Cody, who sucks ass. But of course you should be playing as the mayor, Hagar, just because he's awesome and he can do suplexes or,
he has a mustache. Come on.
He's got a mustache. He's got pile drivers, doesn't he?
He's the basis
for Zangief.
Right. I haven't been able to pull that off, actually. But well, I think that people praise this game because of the caricatural art style. The game is way more cartoony than the regular Final Fight games are. So that gives it, you know, some appeal. And also because they've got this kind of leveling up mechanic where you gain more and more of a health bar, and I think more moves as you play through the game and you kill enemies. But that's all that this leveling up mechanic does. Like, it's very much like maybe the first Double Dragon on the NES. Perhaps not even as satisfying as that. And it's nothing like something like River City Ransom, where you can not only play co-op, but you also have like all this crazy stuff where you can buy sushi or, I don't know, you can go to shops and pay money to upgrade your character and stuff. So
you can talk to NPCs.
You can talk to NPCs.
That game is kind of an RPG beat 'em up.
Yeah.
It's kind of, what's that game? We played it a really long time ago for Retroactive.
River City Ransom, the one he just mentioned.
No, I was actually thinking of Mystical Ninja.
Yeah, kind of.
Right. But anyway, Mighty Final Fight is just you're playing by yourself, and eventually you reach that point in any Final Fight game that you play by yourself where you think...
The Final Fight?
Yeah, sure. I didn't get to the Final Fight, unfortunately. But you reach that point where the enemies just become obnoxious and kind of impossible to beat. You have to be very, very precise. I don't even know, like, you can't block in these games, right? So it's just, you have to hit them before they hit you, and... eventually, like, they become really unfair and you don't really make any progress and you're like, why do I even bother? And you stop playing.
Yeah. The problem with every beat 'em up is that at some point it's just a beat 'em up.
Yeah.
I just don't think they're very fun games, and it doesn't matter how many bells and whistles you put on it.
Yeah.
You
know, they were fun when there was, they were fun when there was nothing else out there.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, X-Men was cool to like pump a dollar into and play with your friends at Walmart while mom was shopping, but it's not a game you really want to take home. It's just not. Yeah.
As we've seen
to long sessions.
It came out on PSN and XBLA, and
yeah,
a lot of people,
was like,
I think,
oh, this game isn't actually fun.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I remember this game. Wow. It kind of sucks.
This is probably the second best Final Fight after Streetwise. So
I just think beat 'em ups. I don't think we as gaming ever really figured out how to make beat 'em ups into a satisfying home experience. And at some point, companies like Capcom just gave up. Mm-hmm. But they tried for a long time.
I mean, in general, Capcom just gave up. Yes, so
on everything but Monster Hunter.
So let's not talk in specifics here. Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Well, let's move on to John to wrap up new business.
All right. Of course, I had to pick up Metroid Prime Trilogy when it came out on the eShop. It's very nice being able to launch it directly off the Wii U menu. And I've only played Metroid Prime up to this point. I didn't have much time over the weekend. I was busy the entire weekend, of course. So pretty much all I could do with it was download it and then play like an hour of it, really. But it was interesting because I don't think I've played Metroid Prime, the first one. It's been a long time. I may not have played it again because I've had my GameCube. I mean, that thing hasn't been hooked up in forever. And, I actually did bought Trilogy for Wii. But I never played it through. I mean, it wasn't really a huge priority because I've beaten all the games, but I just wanted to have it more than anything. So,
yeah,
it's your amiibo, basically.
I mean, it was kind of a reissue collector's edition. So, I mean, especially considering you'd already played all three of those games, although the trilogy versions are better and significantly different than the original releases. But that's one of those cases, John, where I feel like the fact that you bought the game and never really played it is kind of excusable for Metroid Prime Trilogy because it was basically released so that was kind of a viable reason to own it. You know, it was just because, well, I want this collection just to keep, for posterity.
Yep. So I've only played through the first area, which, I mean, it's good. It's pixelated now, and it doesn't look quite as sharp as it did when it first came out, or maybe, you know, I'm probably just used to sharper graphics. But, I mean, the gameplay is still really great. I really love the way it kind of sets the tone. Like, you know, you start off on this, you know, this ship that's orbiting Talon 4, and you really don't know what happened, but everything is either dead or dying. There's space pirates everywhere. They're doing some sort of bioengineering stuff. But the thing is, so, you know, they have the scanning mechanic where you scan objects. You can switch to your scanner and scan objects in the environment. And this was always my big beef with those games, was for me, like Guillaume, I like to get 100% in these games. So, I mean, any first-person shooter and that I play, you know, or any kind of first-person game, especially one like this where it's all, there's a certain amount of lore behind it, which is one of the things I always loved about the Metroid Prime series, is because they kind of flesh out the world behind Metroid, because it's really interesting. And so it's really, like, I really like to do like a deep dive into all the kind of different the enemies and just anything I can get, any kind of info that I can get. And they really cater to that in Metroid Prime. So I'm the guy that winds up, I mean, I scan everything. It's like the first time I encounter an enemy, I scan it, even if it's killing me, right? And the thing is they do go overboard with it though, because they make too much stuff scannable, because you have to, and the thing is, you don't know what really counts towards the achievement for it or not. At least I don't know, maybe they've changed that in the trilogy version of it. But I really have no idea. I know that there's certain things that count and certain things that don't count, because I mean, you can do stuff like you can scan a door before you go through it, and then when you go through it, you can turn around and scan it again. And they're legit scans. They're new scans.
Right.
But I don't, but you're never really sure if what you're scanning necessarily counts towards the end game achievement, because I think when I beat Metroid Prime first, I had 99 out of 100 scans, something like that. And I think the only thing I didn't scan was like the second phase of one of the bosses. And I had no idea that that was even scannable. That's another thing. You don't know if things are actually scannable until you look. So if you're in the middle of fighting a boss and you happen to forget to scan the second phase because you have no indication that the second phase is actually something that you can scan, you're going to miss that scan and you can't go back and get it. So, yeah. So it's good.
Replay value in 2002.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, I mean, and you can't go back. You have to play the whole game again to get those.
Right.
Which really sucks. Move on with your life and not worry about silly ass.
Yeah, I know,
like,
and you say that, but it's like Guillaume's point. It's like, if you give a shit about that, then that's really annoying.
It's a scarf.
Yeah, but it's not, though. It's not, though. I mean, if you go in there with the game, I mean, you can't just like write the whole thing off like that. Like, that's a pretty blanket statement to make, because if you're looking to do 100%, James, I don't want to hear it. If you're looking to do 100%, they should make it so that it's actually easy to do that and not a big pain in the ass. And they kind of do that.
Dial it down. Calm. Happy place. Happy
but
place.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's really good. But of course, what happened at the end is I got burned by it, because you get into after you kill the end boss of the first area, you're on a timer. So you have to get out of there by under 6 minutes. And of course, I was still like, I still had the scan visor up. So I was going slower than I normally would. And I ran out of time, and of course I died, you know, because the place blows up or whatever. And of course now I have to do it all over again and scan everything all over again. So yeah, fuck you, game.
Lessons in life, John. So, if you take too long just examining the flowers.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where I wish that it was like,
you'll die. Basically.
I wish that it was like modern games in which generally that stuff is saved as you go along. So it doesn't matter. You can go in. And regardless of whether or not, like, you know, like just playing, like, for example, like the Halo Master Chief collection, it doesn't matter if you, like, you can go in and, like, you know, because what I do is I go through and I get all the skulls and all the terminals. And if you go in there and get the skull, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you finish anything or if you make the next save point or any of that stuff. I mean, you can start it up, go in, get the skull, and, like, just basically quit the game and get it, which is fine because the stuff is just completely extraneous and fluff anyways. So, forcing you to have to go through all the way until you hit like a save point is pretty harsh.
Serious question.
I'm sure it's serious, James.
Why the fuck is Master Chief collecting skulls? Doesn't he have better shit to do?
Actually, I don't know. I think it's interesting that you would choose Halo to compare it to, because not only was, you know, Halo the game that arguably killed the Metroid Prime series, sub-series, there certainly were competitors throughout the years, isn't Halo the series where people used to get really pissed off because they would play the game for like 6 hours, but then not go to their obscure save menu to save their progress, and then they would turn it off and they would lose all, you know, hours and hours and hours of progress?
I'm not sure. Maybe
I'm pretty sure that happened.
Maybe in the early ones, yeah.
Like 3? Is that one of the early ones, like Halo 3 in 2007? Mm. Is that an early Halo game?
It's all early in Cosmic time.
Yeah.
It's a couple years before Metroid Prime Trilogy, I know, but anyway, yeah. I'm kind of messing with you, but yeah, that sucks. I would say, I mean, I adore Metroid Prime. I love all of them, but scan the red shit and don't worry about the rest of it unless you just
care
about the story.
Not
going to
happen, buddy.
And if you care about the story, then you don't care about getting 100%.
Then go play Metroid Sakamoto's Baby.
Yeah.
Maybe I could just not play the game, Johnny. How's about that?
Oh, come on.
Maybe that's the answer here.
Come on.
Join the light, John.
Well, it's like, you know. Yeah.
If you can't 100% it, you might as well not even try at all, right?
That's right.
That's
there
a great way to go through life.
That's it. That's it.
All right. Well, let's take a break now. When we come back, we've got your listener mail.
Now playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. It's another week, and it's another... First off this week, we have a review. Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask 3D by Aaron Kaluska. If you play Majora's Mask, you probably either love it or hate it. Aaron takes a first real crack at the game with this new version and comes away impressed. Sort of. Find out if you should take the moonshot and play this game at Termina Velocity.
Get it? Terminal?
I just figured I would say it really slowly and just let...
It's like you have to savor it.
Let the audience just let it wash over them. Mm-hmm. Pretty much what we do in this segment. We just wash over our audience. We leave them with kind of a foul stench afterwards. Second up this week. We never give the number for the second one. We say also, but second up this week. We have a preview of Codenamed Steam, which is a bunch of periods in the word Steam, from Neil Ronahan. Neil gets some hands-on time with the newest from Intelligent Systems and walks away a changed man. Gone is the old Neil, that couldn't care less about the game. In his place is a man eager to get steaming. Find out why he's so hyped in this preview. You had the opportunity to say things like, find out why he's so steamed up in this preview.
Yeah, I was trying to work in steaming pile, but I couldn't. All right, and we have a feature. Know your Nintendo developers, EAD1. You think you know EAD1, but you don't know a damn thing.
Oh, shit.
I think it's time you get educated, and this article is where you should start. Honestly, if you can't tell me who was development director on Swapnote, get the hell away from me. You disgust me.
Wow. John, who was the dev development director on Swapnote?
Something ends with an I? I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. Anyways... You Suzuki. I don't know. I don't know these things. I'm not a scientist. And we have a review of the new Nintendo 3DS XL by Aaron Kaluska. Aaron takes a look at Nintendo's newest console. Newest handheld. What am I doing? Newest handheld and tells us whether or not it's worth ponying up for if you already own one. I mean, you're not going to see any other 3DS type on these shores ever. I mean, only an idiot would think that. I mean, a real moron.
You know what, John? Son, I'm gonna break character for now playing because we have our established newsreader personas here for this segment. We're very professional.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Hey, fuck you.
And on that note, that's now playing for this game.
You can get all of this plus other things in a similar nature of this every day, all day long. I mean, all of the days long. As long as the day is, you can get it for that many seconds because it's on a website, and that website. It's good. I mean, sorry, it's NintendoWorldReport.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's time for listener mail, and the address, as always, is rfn@NintendoWorldReport.com. We've got some short emails this week. Maybe they'll go quickly. The first one... Yeah,
they won't.
I can't even keep a straight voice saying
quickly.
The first one is from Icedus writes, I'm legitimately curious as to how you guys plan to unload your Club Nintendo coins, aside from keeping Urban Champion handy on all of your 3DS systems, obviously. I'm surprised I can manage a couple decent freebies with how few games I've picked up for the 3DS, but Donkey Kong 94 on the Game Boy still holds up for me as a game that's fun to regularly revisit every few years. So yeah, since the last time we recorded, the giant array of almost all downloadable stuff for Club Nintendo's last gasp went up, and all those coins you've been hoarding for the one day when they would bring back the Luigi 3DS XL charging cradle or whatever. Now you can spend them to download some pretty crazy stuff, including for the first time Wonderful 101, which is 600 coins, which is not that many, really.
No. I could buy it like three times.
You can download Wii Fit U. Is that right? Yeah, Wii Fit U. Yes. Yeah. Yep. Wii U Fit? No. Wii Fit U, you can still get Game & Wario, which was a Platinum Award last year. Now you can just spend your coins on it. So definitely some games that they've never made available for Club Nintendo Rewards are now up there, which I think is pretty sweet. And they're larger games and they use a lot of coins. So if you have like a huge, you know, trough of coins that you've been waiting for a rainy day to get rid of, that seems like a great way to do it. And also just like dozens upon dozens of Virtual Console things. So, and, you know, a few other, smaller titles from Nintendo as well. NES Remix, some stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I was really surprised at the variety, that they're offering here. I was like, you know, if this kind of stuff had been available, especially this large of a selection, I mean, why didn't they just kind of, why not have all these games available all the time for the past 3 years? Right. Yeah. Why rotate it three per month? You know, three games.
Right. Well, they were rotating four games. Come on. Okay, but also, I think that maybe people would have been like, okay, well, I guess I don't need to buy any of the games on this list because eventually, if, you know, I ever want to, I can just pay with Nintendo coins.
Right.
You know, I don't think, like, if I had known that eventually I would be able to get all of these titles, through Club Nintendo, I probably would have held off, buying some.
Really? I mean, Isn't the nature of video games today that you can always wait and get it for cheap or free later?
You know? I mean,
PlayStation Plus that way, virtual console stuff. Think about it. Yeah, if you're willing to wait 20 years, you could probably buy that new game for almost
John
next to nothing.
John doesn't have 20 years.
Yeah, but the exception is Nintendo games.
It's true.
Like Nintendo games are evergreen usually. So, and they didn't used to do sales very often. So Nintendo was kind of the exception to the rule. So yeah, sure. Like, but now if these titles had always been available for free, quote unquote, through Club Nintendo, then the situation would have been reversed and I would have been buying all the third parties and using the coins from those buys to get Nintendo stuff. I don't think that's what Nintendo would have wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird situation.
I'm a little surprised at the breadth of like Gen 2 3DS games they've got listed up here.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got 3D Land and Mario Brothers 2, New Super Mario Brothers 2 at
That's
600
sweet.
Points.
That's pretty awesome.
They've got Sticker Star at 700 points. Mm. Weirdly, they've got Star Fox 64 3D at 700 points. I don't. What?
Well, it's still selling for like $40 Canadian over
why
here.
Why is that? Why is that more than 3D Land, which is like an amazing game?
I don't know, but regardless, I think all of those would be better than Sticker Star. I really would not recommend.
Well, hold on.
Unless you already own all the other ones and there's nothing else on the list you want, I probably would not spend 700 coins relatively, you know, you could get much better games on that
you
list
could get,
for 700
you could get,
coins.
I think Wii Party U is that. Which is no, it's $850. But
right.
Game and Wario is like
$650. Wow.
Game and Wario, I think it's the most expensive thing. But like Game and Wario, $600. Wonderful 101, $600. I mean, mm-hmm. You could get six copies of some real shit NES game and give it to all your friends.
You know,
right.
I want to go back real quick because I hear this so often. Even you know, very recently, I've heard many people different you know say that. Well, Nintendo games really retain their value, and I'm thinking. Did you miss the part last year where they gave away a game for free with Mario Kart 8?
Yeah.
I mean, Did you miss the part where they started, you know, bundling in Mario 3D World and you know, new Super Mario Brothers, you and Luigi U both with a new system, and you also get Nintendo Land, you know, and you get 10% off everything you buy?
That is a recent development.
That said, historically, and there are exceptions.
Historically,
I mean, Metroid,
sure.
Yeah, Metroid Other M, sure. Like, you could find it in stores for $10 for a while, but...
yeah, Wonderful 101. If you pay more than $15 at retail for that
Sin
game,
and Punishment
you're stupid.
2. Sin and Punishment 2 probably didn't sell better than Metroid Other M, and never really went down in price, I don't think.
Not really. Retailers eventually made the call to cut the price on that game.
Right. And I think they did for Other M as well, but that's the thing. Like, you never know. It's kind of a crapshoot, you know?
I mean, you could get Kid Icarus Uprising and just...
kill yourself?
Yeah, I mean, you will, because eventually your wrist will snap and the blood spray will be enough that you'll just die.
Actually, like, if you've got the coins for them, James made fun of my two picks, Star Fox 64 3D and Kid Icarus Uprising.
Why is that game so expensive?
I don't know, but you're not gonna, you're saving by paying this many Nintendo coins. Like, they're still really expensive on the eShop and...
I just don't know anybody who does...
full price on the eShop.
I mean, Star Fox 64 3DS for the 3DS is like a Gen 1 3DS game.
I know. But still,
I
would get those.
Who has a 3DS and isn't going to buy that doesn't already have it?
I might get it because it's fake currency.
Who cares?
I never wanted to spend $40 on Star Fox 64, which I played the year before on Virtual Console on my Wii.
Which, by the way, is also on there. It's also on the list. Is that game on the for $250.
Cool.
Right.
But anyway,
I would get either of those because those are the only two games on the 3DS list that have download play. And I think if you're not usually a consumer of eShop games and, you know, you don't usually buy your retail games on the eShop, these you might want to because, having them all the time on your SD card, that's awesome. Because at any point, if you meet someone else with 3DS, like if you go to PAX, like, whatever, if you find people to play with, you're going to be able to. And you're not going to have to hunt for a cart. So these are the only two. I've looked at the list. I don't think any other games have download play. So I think those are good recommendations.
And Star Fox 64 has local video chat.
Yeah. Well, it's,
yes,
it's kind
it
of funny. It's kind of cute. Doesn't make sense,
I'll
but it's cute.
I'll say, I think if you didn't want to spend the $10, I think Earthbound for 250 coins is a great pickup, especially if you've always
if
been kind of on the fence about it. You know, this would be a great time to check it out. For the same reason, I'm going to try Game & Wario because I did not make Platinum last year. So that was not one of the choices I got. And I'm curious enough about that game to spend no dollars on it. So I think I will check that out. Wonderful 101. If you love Bayonetta and you're willing to play a game that is similar but not as good, you might want to check out Wonderful 101. But I don't think that's a game that you will necessarily get a ton of play out of if you don't already love, you know, Platinum game stuff. But
yeah,
that's a great is the best Wii Fit by far. It is really underrated.
I mean, obviously
You can play some stuff without the balance board, but I wouldn't really recommend it
To me, the Fit Monitor is the big thing in that game.
But it's not.
It's
a nice thing, but it's like, can you play that Pokemon game without the pedometer?
But my point is, it's the big change in that game.
That's actually bad marketing by Nintendo because they added a ton of new events and much better interface and you can create much better custom workouts. And that Wii Fit U is a much, much, much better version of Wii Fit Plus, regardless of whether you use the Fit Meter. So the Fit Meter you can also get for like $5 at Fry's Electronics right now. I mean,
doesn't the Fit Meter come with a download code for something?
Used to be that you could get the software for free if you bought a Fit Meter.
Yes.
If you synced it with the game.
That was the pre-launch deal.
Gotcha.
Remember the big launch of Wii Fit U? Me neither. But I remember the pre-launch deal where I got a free copy of it, and I bought a $10 used balance board and Cloraxed the shit out of it before I used it from GameStop. But yeah, I mean, if you're willing to go through those hoops, I think that's a really sweet thing. And Also, Golden Sun on the Wii U Virtual Console. It's a GBA game, but if you've never played Golden Sun, I have issues with it, but I think for 200 coins, I mean, it's like, it's cost as much as like Wrecking Crew for NES. I mean, I think Golden Sun is, there's a lot of game there. It's a cool game.
I really like that game. I just will continue to be frustrated that thing's on the Wii U and not on 3DS.
Okay, fair enough. 1080 snowboarding doesn't hold up that well, but it's a weird curiosity from the N64.
It is a product of, I would say, 1997 through 2003.
And also a super legit recommendation, Fluidity on the Wii.
Sure.
That is an awesome game.
Yeah, that's like one of my two picks for if you've got a Wii U. Like Fluidity is one of the best WiiWare games. And other than that, I think Cubello, Art Style Cubello, was really a really clever little puzzle game.
Yeah,
and
it's cool.
I really enjoyed the hell out of it. So that's 200 coins.
Yeah, for me personally, I'm looking at maybe NES Remix. I only have 540 coins, so maybe NES Remix.
Can you get more? Is that the end of the line?
I think I can redeem games that came out prior to January 20th until March 31st.
Yes.
Yeah. I've got a bunch of like 10 coin surveys that'll take forever to get through.
I may buy a game here or there if I can find them cheap and pump it up a little bit and maybe get Kid Icarus Uprising.
Maybe. Oh, John, why?
I don't know.
John, why?
I don't know.
don't.
I enjoyed it. It was good.
Harmonite.
It's
was
not.
Calling
it's
to
not
me.
Good.
I always wanted to play Harmonite, but it was $15, and I didn't really think I would get $15 worth of play out of it. But I could get 300 coins of play out of it for sure.
So John and I were actually discussing a game on here this weekend. Intelligent Systems best game, Echo Shooter Planet 530.
No. No.
The prequel to Splatoon?
Yeah. It was kind of like that game
came up. Well, we're discussing this.
And it was like James was like, "What the hell is that?" And I'm like, "Well, it's this.
It's totally random shooter.
Yeah, it's totally random, like garbage Echo themed shooter. Not garbage, like bad, but literally garbage themed."
Well, to be fair, we were going through every game Intelligent System made. We're like, "Wow, there's got to be one piece of shit in here somewhere."
Yep, because this is what we do in our spare time, literally.
Yeah, it's not very good. Like, I don't know. It's in one of my first few episodes. Probably gave people a bad impression of me. But,
I think we called it a not quite piece of shit. So like, I think we said they came out perfect.
Cuso great, maybe, huh?
Yeah. Cuso great.
Honestly, if you're bored sometime, just go to Intelligent Systems website and look at every game they've put out. You will find something and you're like, wait, what the fuck? Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They've been around a long time.
On the DSiWare or eShop side, like if you don't have the coins for Star Fox and Kid Icarus, I would say avoid by all, like, absolutely do not get Luxley's lineup. You might think like, oh, good feel, and like an intriguing premise where it tracks your face to make these kind of weird puzzles. Like it tracks your face and you have to move the DS to, you know, affect the picture on screen to find stuff. It doesn't work. The thing was not powerful enough to track your face. So, so avoid that, but do get Mario versus Donkey Kong Minis on the Move. I think that's a really, really good game.
I mean, even better, the one that Istis recommended, Donkey Kong 94. So it's just called Donkey Kong on the store, but for Game Boy, that is a great game. Great game.
It was good for the time, but I think Minis on the Move is, I don't know, it's pretty spectacular.
Actually. Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm looking at the list, and a lot of the stuff I want, I already have, which is frustrating. Mm-hmm. I kind of just wish I could just dump this thing back into, like, here's so much eShop credit, go have nuts. And just buy whatever I want, because a lot of the stuff I either got as when they had the little coin giveaways, or some of it I got as, you know, like the platinum reward last year, or I got with something else. So I might end up with more, you know, like I really like Super Mario Brothers 2, new Super Mario Brothers 2. I think 600 coins, if you play that game with somebody else and just be like, let's just get as many coins as we can, and just be completely suicidal trying to get coins. I think that can be a real fun waste of, you know, an hour or two in a sitting.
Well, also, even without that, just to play through it normally, I mean, if you skipped it to begin with, at this point, it maybe has been long enough since the last 2D Mario game that you might enjoy just playing through it, period. You know, at the time, part of why I had problems with New Super Mario Bros. 2 is because it came out really close to the Wii U game.
Right.
But if you skipped it at the time, going back to it now, you probably enjoy it quite a bit. I mean, it's a perfectly fine 2D Mario game.
Oh my God, I logged in. I've got 1,800 coins.
We're not gonna hear from James. So that's the nice thing. I mean, I think, you know, Club Nintendo, for all the problems that we had with it, this is a pretty nice way for it to go out. I think this will definitely, other than the website, you know, not being very robust against all this traffic, I think this will give people kind of a sweet taste on the way out the door, and I think they will, you know, kind of redeem some goodwill at the end of the day. But it really does make you wonder, just like,
what could it have been?
Yeah, I mean, when you see the potential here, I mean, this is what, like, got to be about 100 games that are available, plus, you know, a dozen of these little knickknack things that some of these have been gone for a long time and they brought them back. I think there's a couple of new ones there.
If you're a hardcore collector, some of this stuff's actually pretty cool. Like the Fierce Deity jigsaw puzzle, like that's a pretty neat piece of art they put together.
Yeah, sure.
But
lots of poster sets, obviously.
Yeah, there's always a bunch of poster sets.
Lots of calendars. And as many people pointed out, yes, you can finally pay coins to get Doc Lewis Punch Out. So I don't really think it's worth the 250 or whatever. You know, there's probably much better uses of your coins that you could put on this list. But if you were always super curious and you love Punch Out, I'm glad that you can go and grab that now.
Or if you're like me and you have way too many fucking coins to start with.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm really disappointed that they didn't put back in? It's the DSiWare version of Four Swords. Like, they made it available the one time, and those who didn't have a DSi back then missed out on it.
I mean, that was a lot like this. And it's just they make this weird stuff and then they just sit on it for a while. And the only thing I could think of is maybe they're still trying to get a GBA emulator for 3DS. Seriously, fucking Nintendo, just fucking do it. and that's one of the games they want to launch it with.
Hmm. Oh, it so plus, they would not make the DSi. Okay. Well,
it,
maybe.
It plus Minish Cap and go, all right, there. Not Minish Cap, the remake of, damn it, Link to the Past. Because that's what it came with originally. So, I don't know. Nintendo's just fucking confusing.
Yeah, but this is a fascinating way for them to end Club Nintendo.
Hey, and John, is NES Play Action Football any good?
I've never played it, but I think it's pretty terrible.
It had four player support back in the day.
How?
Yeah.
As a four score.
That NES. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see Lost Levels was on there, actually. Which is weird to see that game listed on its own as a virtual console game.
I mean, it's been out for virtual console for a while.
You know? I know. Yeah. It's just weird that it's there. Like, even now, it's like, how? Why?
I think it's interesting that you can get both Dylan's Rolling Western and the sequel to that game are both on this list. But
I do wonder if some of these 3DS like new franchise ones, if it's part of like, well, maybe that franchise is dead, and we're just not going to try to pursue that one anymore.
Or they've probably sold all the copies of Dylan's Rolling Western that they're going to sell. So they got
the
nothing to lose.
The sell through on those is got to be awful at this point.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I'm very pleasantly surprised by the selection here, and I'm excited to finally get into the website this weekend, maybe, and
Cheapy Robo Photo Finder.
Try to spin that stuff. All right.
I just wish, like, I think I used to have 1,200 coins, and then last month I tried to download Excitebike because I thought I didn't have it, but I already did have it, and so I gave it away on Twitter. But then two more people asked for it, and I went and got two more codes.
Oh,
I lost 600 coins trying to be nice and failing at it because what I was giving was shit.
You're Excyclaws.
Oh, Lord. It's good stuff.
All right. Well, let's move on. James is going to read the next email.
Eric writes, "Gentlemen, first, let me say that I am a huge fan of the podcast, and how grateful I am for the work you do. With the recent demise of Joystick, it got me thinking about each of you. RFN is my number one go-to weekly podcast, but Joystick was my daily go-to gaming news site, Of course, I frequent Nintendo World Report, but I was curious how each of you obtained your gaming news and what websites you frequent. Any suggestions for me now that Joystick is closed?
Yeah, I actually responded to him and kind of listed. I'm a big RSS feed guy, so I typically just... I don't usually go to the websites themselves, but I do have them all in my RSS feed. And in my RSS feed, it's like
what do you
Gamma
use,
Sutra.
John? Now that Google Reader is gone, what I've never actually
I use whatever. I think that moved over to Feedly. I think.
Okay.
So yeah, so I just transferred everything over to Feedly, and I just use that. So.
That is like an evolution of the internet that totally passed me by. The hilarious thing is, I actually have spent a lot of hours editing RSS feeds for podcasts, but I never used one of those as like a news aggregator. I love it.
I mean, yeah. I honestly use Twitter a lot.
Yeah, I do
too. Yeah, that's a website, the gaming website that I check out, just Twitter, because I follow, apparently, everyone I follow is interested in video games, and so that, you know, I get the news through them. Wario64.
Oh, yeah, especially if you want deals. That guy is awesome, by the way. He hooked me up with, when I first, about a month ago, right after I moved to Las Vegas, my PlayStation Plus was about to expire. And I asked him, if he had heard any deals where you could go get a discount on a PS Plus subscription card, at retail. And he said, well, those don't come around very often. But then he got back to me like the next day and said, actually, it's on the weekend deal for Fry's Electronics. Mm-hmm. You just have to have like an email code. And I said, oh man, I just moved to a city where they actually have Fry's. That's awesome. I need to go check it out. But I signed up for the email thing, and of course I didn't get a code right away. Basically I was too late for that weekend to get a code. And so he had a few of them somehow. I'm sure he's just signed up for 1,000 different newsletters or whatever, but he sent me a code and I went and got like a year of PS Plus for like $40. Follow Wario64. Is like, you'll get a ton of information, and he's very friendly and very, very helpful.
I don't go to gaming sites for news. I go to usgamer.net just because, you know, I liked Retronauts, the podcast, and I like Jeremy Parrish, and I used to like 1UP, and there's at least three editors of 1UP, former editors of 1UP, over there, but they mostly do features. I think they specifically stay away from news. And I think that's probably the way to go if you're doing a gaming news, a gaming website in 2015. Because, you know, people don't go to your website to go read the news. They'll go to
Twitter.
They'll go to Twitter. They'll go to the website that stole the news from your site.
Yep.
I mean, it's not even stole the news anymore because they'll go to Nintendo themselves. I mean, ultimately, I go to the Nintendo Direct website. I watch it on my phone during a fucking snowstorm when I'm trying to clear off a car, because guess what? Nintendo World Report, the site we work for, is getting our news from there, or at best, we got a press release an hour or two earlier that we're embargoed on, or we've got somebody scheduled to go play this game, and that's embargoed. So ultimately, you know...
Yeah. I was trying to think about this. I was like, the only ones I really ever look at are the Nintendo press website, because I can go and read the press releases there, which, you know, most people don't have access to.
Yeah, and that website is...
You're not missing much, people. Yeah. Trust me.
It's not. I don't think it's updated since like 2003.
I'm still using the same login that Corey Lewis set up for me when he worked at Golan Harris back around 2003, 2004.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he told me that it would expire, and it never did. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then I go, one of the ones you mentioned in your email, John, I go to PlayStation official blog to find out what games are coming out on PS Plus if I don't already know from Twitter. Or I go and try to find out, oh, hey, did they ever do a release date for Axiom Verge? No, not yet. Okay, bye.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, for me, it's I think I subscribe on my RSS feed to Gamma Sutra, GamesIndustry.biz, the PlayStation blog, Major Nelson, and I'm trying to think of what else. I think I actually subscribe to Edge's RSS feed, but I don't think they post anything.
No.
And some other things, but I stay away from like Kotaku and
Polygon. Obviously.
Just because the thing is, they just post a lot of fluff articles that I just don't care about.
John, what's in your McDonald's French fries? You would know if you follow their RSS feed. You'd know. You'd fucking know,
I
John.
I mean, if you spend any time on Facebook or Twitter, you'll see all the stuff from Kotaku and
yeah.
But yeah, it's because that's where their news team got it from.
Well, maybe. But also they advertise a lot. Other people retweet it or post it on Facebook, and you'll find that stuff. And, you know, I'll occasionally click on something if it sounds – a lot of times it's like, here's a video we found on YouTube of something crazy happening in Smash Brothers. It's like, okay, I'll go there and I'll watch that, and it's funny, and I'm out. But I don't really go to those places for the writing. And by the way, all the things that we just told you are the reason that Joystick is shutting down, and it's sad.
Yep.
But – that is a business that has always been very, very difficult to make work from a business sense. And, you know, the reason that Nintendo World Report has been around for 15 years as of next month is we're not a business. I mean, basically we're not, you know, like yeah. We only make enough money to pay our costs. We all work for free. And we're very, very low overhead, you know, way of doing things. And that's the reason that we're still around. And,
yeah.
You know, I really feel bad for everybody who lost their job and everything. But, like, I'm kind of amazed that they were able to make a living, like, writing news about video games in the year 2014 and a little bit into 2015. It's like, I can't believe anybody is still able to do that. I can't believe that Polygon is around. I can't believe any of these websites are actually still professional. And if they can make it work, God bless them.
Well, they're not professional.
But I mean, it should not be a surprise when these websites shut down. It really should not.
And it doesn't. It doesn't help that Joystick was owned by AOL,
right?
Which isn't exactly the hottest property out there.
Yeah. Mm. So I would also say that these sites that are trying to make their money on news are getting their, you know, they're getting eaten by message boards, Twitter, and then people who are trying to make their stuff on opinion and review, they're getting crushed by, you know, YouTube personalities and people who just stream the video and give their opinions of it.
Sure. Which I don't really get a lot out of the whole YouTube scene. I know some people do, but I'll say this. I mean, the vast majority of my gaming analysis and some news too really comes from podcasts. I listen to a shitload of game podcasts, probably 10 or 15 regularly, like too many, you know, like it's hard for me to keep up with them all. But, and it sucks because sometimes I hear the same stories like three or four times just from different people. And sometimes especially when they don't really understand what's going on, it's, you know, this is annoying with Nintendo stuff when it gets announced and then people sort of misinterpret it or they really take the least interesting angle on it. And then you hear that repeated three or four times. It's kind of frustrating, but yeah, I mean, I like hearing people's personal analyses of this stuff and hear different voices on it and hear different sides of it. So that's the way I kind of keep up with video games most of the time. It's just through that and Twitter for sure.
I've got nothing else.
I go to Play For Real for all my gaming news. So that's fine.
Play For Real. What is it? Real Kaz Harai? Is that the account?
No, Play For Real is the parody
Peter
video game.
Peter Molyneux.
Yeah, they gave away the, what was it? Their 2014 Gaming Award sponsored by Gaming News Award sponsored by Polygon. I was just losing my fucking mind reading that article.
They're basically the Onion of video game journalism.
Except just way meaner. Just real fucking mean.
They are mean.
No, this is good.
No, way better. They're way, because they cut way deeper. Those cuts go way deep.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next email, and Guillaume is going to read this one.
Oh, am I? Jason writes, nobody seems to have mentioned that local Splatoon multiplayer could use the new 3DS as a substitute for the tablet. They have the exact same button layout and gyro functions. The top screen could stream gameplay and the touchpad could mimic the map functions. Not ideal, perhaps, but better than split screen.
Oh, Jason. New 3DS.
Okay, first, I just want to know, does the new 3DS have, what are those things called? Magnetometers?
Oh, magnetometers?
Magnetometers?
Yeah. That's a good question. I think
the 3DS has all its motion through gyros.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think it has a magnetometer.
The gamepad has that, Right. The gamepad has a one to keep track of basically where the TV is, or, you know, like
no,
where
it knows, the starting it point always was. Knows where down is. Right. It knows where the earth right. is. That's the reason you put a magnetometer
as opposed
in
the to device. Have. So when you had the Theramotion Plus, you had to calibrate it by setting it down. That just eliminates the need.
It doesn't completely right. eliminate it, because Nintendo Land sometimes asks you to,
I know,
to set the
does.
Gamepad
it
down.
Should, or, it should eliminate it, because ultimately yeah. it knows where zero is, and it knows the or it knows the shape and the position of the magnetometer, so it should be able to calibrate yaw, essentially, based on where zero is.
Yeah, it's supposed to give you an absolute reference point that you can use to recalibrate everything. It's not perfect, but it helps. It's certainly better than pure gyro, which is what you had with Wii Motion Plus. But right. It basically just stabilizes motion control. And there's so little use of motion control in 3DS games that I'm not really surprised that they haven't bothered to upgrade that part of it. But no, I think this would be a great idea if it was technically possible, Jason, but new 3DS cannot just stream the game from Splatoon running on Wii U to the it can't just put the video on the top screen for you and let you use that as your personal device. That's way beyond what the 3DS can
well,
do.
Well, and we never ever got a solid answer on if the Wii U could even stream to two different devices at the same time. At one point, they said, oh, maybe. And then
yeah.
I mean, they came out and said, oh, absolutely, but,
yeah, but then they never did
we're
it.
Not doing it. You
yeah.
know? I mean, maybe we'll do it one day, but not now.
And, yeah.
And now it's kind of pointless.
It seems unlikely to ever really become a reality now. But I mean, and that's to, you know, the gamepad has some pretty snazzy wireless technology inside of it that you don't find in just everyday devices. And it's like super low latency, super fast video compression and decompression. And that's so that you can have, you know, the video streamed directly to that screen, even though the game is running on this box over there. And the Wii U definitely cannot, it seems unlikely that it has the capability to send to the gamepad and to a 3DS or to another device at the same time. The 3DS does not have that capability. As far as we know, you know, even the new one does not have it's not fast enough. It doesn't have the right chips in it to be able to get that kind of streaming video from the box.
I am very curious how local multiplayer Splatoon works. Like how does it feel? How do they, cause then they make a big deal about like, oh, you have the map. You just tap on the map where you want to go and you go there.
Yeah.
All right. We can't do that now. That's gone. Or one right. person can do that. And the other person can't. Well, that's kind of fucked.
Yeah.
So like, do they just gimp everybody? I guess
here's the way I would do it. Make it a co-op mode. And tell people to put the gamepad in between them. I mean, four player with the, you know, with the inking mechanic seems like it might be kind of difficult to parse out all that stuff. Maybe the bright colors help, but certainly with two people, it seems reasonable that you could just put the gamepad in between them or in front of both of them and they could both use it. You know, it's just a, you know, you click on your color to tell the gamepad that it's you, and then you click where you want to go, and then it just sends you there. So you can both share the touchscreen.
Oh, you could grief so bad with that.
But it's co-op. That's against your own self-interest. That would be the idea.
But laughing is funnier than winning.
Or maybe they think of something even more creative. But I feel like they could get around that problem. But I mean, is Splatoon going to be like a great four-player GoldenEye competitive split-screen game? I doubt it.
I doubt it too.
I mean, it seems like the purest way to play that game multiplayer is probably going to be online, which is a weird fucking thing to say for a Nintendo game. But
that's what they showed it at E3. That's exactly the way it was debuted to us.
Yep. And that giant.
But it was kind of a LAN though.
Well, it wasn't sure. running through their network hardware. No, but that would be stupid because if you're running anything through the internet out of the LACC, you're a fucking
course.
Moron.
Of course, but you didn't get the experience that we will get when we get the final product
probably,
in our Wii
but,
U's.
But
no,
it's the kind
that's
of game
E3. I mean, you never get the experience.
I mean,
E3.
It is the kind of game you can hide some of the latency in. If it's not too bad. You can hide a lot of it by just simply displaying only what's actually happening in the area you're seeing, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. We'll see. You know, there was some reports today from a certain translation of a certain comment that indicated that Splatoon may not have voice chat online. And first off, I'm not convinced that that's 100% confirmed. I think there's some some doubt as to the context of that comment. It may have only applied to playing against random people, which I would have been earth shaking if Nintendo let you voice chat with complete strangers in an online Wii U game. But I think the much bigger question is, will you be able to voice chat during the game with your friends who are presumably on your team? That seems like it would be pretty key to this game having any real depth when you play online. And I think that is still an open question, although it's maybe not looking good.
If they have it, let's say, just for the sake of argument, they have online voice chat. It's probably
going
to
be really high quality, James. You know that.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be
it's going to be amazing. It's going to be top of the line voice chat.
It's going to be people yelling about our stage, but we can't hear them because all we hear is the sound of silence.
They'll come out with Wii U Speak. I mean, you know it's going to happen.
Oh. We speak you. We speak you.
The Wii Speak You is built into the gamepad.
Even if friends.
That makes it all right.
Yeah. Even if friend matches allow voice chat, I can't imagine, like, out of 100 friends, even if you have a full list, like we probably all do, like the odds that 8 people are going to be playing at the same time and are all going to join. Like, you can't do that really without playing first.
Yeah.
You really only need 4. I mean, you could play, if you could team up with 3 of your friends, you can all chat with each other. You could play a team of complete strangers. You're not going to be chatting with them anyway. They're on the other team. You're not supposed to be chatting with them. So as long as you can coordinate among you, you know, and there's ways
to live and let live.
There's potentially ways they could give you to communicate without voice chat. But those get increasingly limited and clunky, and, you know, it turns into Phantasy Star Online. And I don't know if, you know, for a very fast paced shooter like Splatoon, I don't really know that that's a good way to go. There's enough happening on the screen already that you trying to read text,
you know,
is probably not helpful.
The thing is, I don't feel like when I was playing that game that I needed to coordinate with people. Like, that game was just chaos. And I wonder if it's just, if that game just comes down to being who is the master of the chaos. Because ultimately, there was a lot of just shit happening everywhere.
For people playing it for any length of time, at some point, they're going to want to develop strategies and work together.
I don't know that there's a ton of strategy to be had. Not cooperative
then
strategy.
It's impossible
to say that, James. It's like someone playing Smash Brothers at E3 for the first time in their life and saying, this is really fun. I don't know how much skill there is to it, but, you know, it seems really fun to
play.
No,
there's a difference between saying skills and being strategy. I mean, you could try to partner up, but I don't necessarily know that they're going to be
able. We've played one mode in one very specific circumstance of a demo that is now already almost a year old. So, you know, if what we played at E3 is all there is to Splatoon, I don't know that I want to buy it.
We know it's not.
We know there's more to it, and those other modes that we have not seen or played yet could have a lot more strategy than what we saw at E3. I hope so.
True.
That would make the game more appealing to me, but only if I can actually strategize with my friends. So we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, Splatoon is, I think we're going to be finding out more about that game, a lot more about it in the near future, because I want to say it's coming out in Japan really soon. Am I crazy?
Ish.
I don't even know.
Like April or something? I want to say it's pretty soon. So, some of these questions, but yeah, voice chat is a big open question mark right now. A lot of people are getting riled up over it. I don't think it's the end of the world if it doesn't have voice chat. I just think it's really stupid and horrible. And I don't want to give Nintendo a pass on stuff like that just because they always do it. You know, just because we have low expectations for online features in Nintendo games. You know, when they come out and say, look, guys, we're doing an online third-person multiplayer shooter. Isn't that great? And it's like, if you're going to go that far, you have to go all the way. Mm-hmm. You have to do it right. You know,
people did go all the way 10 years ago.
Yeah, I'm not giving you a gold star because you finally made an online shooter. You know, if you can't actually do it correctly and put in these basic features, you know. I mean, I saw, you know, our friend Curtis Bonds on Twitter today was like, well, maybe the Wii U's just not powerful enough to run a game like Splatoon and have online voice chat. I was like, dude, Call of Duty 4 did it on Xbox 360 in 2006.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure Wii U can handle this shit.
Yep.
So
it can.
This is entirely up to Nintendo. They can decide to do it or not do it. And I I know what I hope for, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We will see. All right. Well, that's going to have to wrap up the episode this week. Hey, everyone. This is Johnny. This is the part of the show where I originally was going to ask everyone to hurry up and vote on the new retroactive poll, which was going to be closing a few days after this episode went up for download to everybody. Unfortunately, in the time between when we recorded the rest of the episode and now when I'm recording this part and we're getting ready to post that episode, I found out that we sort of ran into some trouble with our survey site. I had moved the process over to SurveyMonkey, which I thought would make it easier for a larger swath of people to participate in Retroactive than have in the past. And apparently it worked too well because we exceeded 100 votes on the poll in less than a week, which is probably the fastest that we've ever done that. And in doing so, when I was checking the results today, just as out of curiosity, really, I found out that if you get over 100 votes on SurveyMonkey, you can't look at the rest of the results unless you pay their monthly subscription fee, which is, you know, I didn't know that when I signed up for the free account. And it's not that we couldn't pay for the monthly fee, but frankly, it's way too high for how much we would ever use a service like this. So I'm going to cut our losses. I went ahead and closed down the poll. We were only able to look at the first 100 responses, which is still a good sample size, but I do apologize that, not everyone's vote could be counted and not everyone, probably got a chance to vote who wanted to. And I'm really sorry about that. And that certainly was not my plan. So the next time we do Retroactive, and I hope that won't be too long from now, we will use something else. We may go back to using the NWR forums. We may be able to find something better that suits our needs for the scale of the audience that we have. But for now, the poll is closed. Again, I'm sorry if you didn't get to vote, but I can go ahead and announce the winner, which is Pokemon the Trading Card Game, which is, of course, the Game Boy Color very strange spin-off from the original Pokemon, in which you play something very similar to Pokemon except with cards instead of actual monsters. That was released last year, I believe, on the 3DS eShop as Virtual Console game. So hopefully this will be something that a great many of you will be able to play along with us. It's very accessible, and it's not very expensive, and it's on 3DS as well as Game Boy Color. So anyway, we'll be talking about that in the upcoming weeks, and I'll let everybody know how they can join in on the discussion and participate in this Retroactive. I hate to bring you the bad news about the voting situation, and again, we'll make sure that this doesn't happen again. Also, you can send your emails for next week or the week after or whenever we can get to it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We always love to hear from all of our listeners. We have lots of emails. We can't get to every single one of them, but we really appreciate everybody who takes the time to write in, and I promise you we read every single one of them, and often we reply directly, especially if we think for whatever reason it's not going to make it on the podcast. We will try to send you a reply if it's a question that we think we can answer, especially in a few words. And finally, our friends over at the Famicast are coming up on their 50th episode, and I know James and Danny and Matt and Ty and the rest of the guys are really excited about it. They've got big plans, and they've been trying to get the word out that they are looking for listener mail, suggestions, feedback on your favorite moments, anything that might help them put together a really special 50th episode. You can send those to famicast@nintendoworldreport.com. And you can also follow those guys on Twitter. I think they're at the Fami Crew. Does that sound right? I should have looked it up ahead of time. Anyway, do a search for Famicast on Twitter. You'll find it very easily. And you can get the latest on that. And of course, if you missed out on all of our warnings and appeals a few months ago, if you've been missing the Famicast lately, that's because it got onto its own podcast feed finally. And so you should definitely go subscribe to that. It's a really fun show. They do it every 2 weeks straight out of the real Japan, talking about Nintendo in English. And that's on iTunes and on our website, the Famicast.
Is there even a real Japan? Japan real? Is there?
That's the kind of thing Ty Sugar would ask.
Yeah, it looks so plasticky in photos.
Yeah, it's basically just cartoon land.
Mm.
Anyway, that's all. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did, and we will talk to you next week here on Radio Free Nintendo.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye. You know I'm just messing with you, John.
I know, but just because you think an idea is dumb doesn't mean you should write it off wholesale. Oh, yeah, that thing you want to do that you're complaining about that's difficult? Yeah, just don't do that. That's beautiful logic.
John, what is worth doing that does not present its own difficulties?
Wow.
That's deep.
Confucius say.